You will now be placed into conference.
Jay, are you there?
I'm here.
Great.
Hello. This is Mike.
Mike's there. Roger, are you there? Not yet. Okay. Roger hopefully will join us soon, and I know that Mike and Kelly are here in a room with me. And is Odette there?
I'm here.
Great. And Odette, do you have enough of your DTSD colleagues around to start?
I think so, as long as you don't give me any tough legal questions just yet till Colleen gets back in the room. But I think we're good to go.
Okay. Well, yeah. Don't know about that. So we are going to now, we've sort of been going into this multiple criteria and this process question, and I think Kelly brought up a really interesting point of how specific do the regulations need, and is this a one-shot deal where we have so much specificity in the regs that we don't ever have to come back again, or is there a different model on the table? So I think that was put out there, and we won't be answering that today, but it's something for DTSD to think about. The question with 2B has to do with what criteria and what kind of process. So we talked about some of those exposure potential factors used to prioritize. And what I heard was that while total volume in production, which is one of the examples here, may be very useful, it may be also difficult to get and therefore should not necessarily trump the harm, the level of harm, and the exposure to subpopulations. So would anyone disagree with that statement of relative factors?
Colleen suggested I make it clear that in a lot of situations, we will be able to get some volume data, but there could be instances where we won't. So just to clarify.
So when it's an unknown, right? Yes, Mike.
I guess my question is, I don't see how that that question, volume and production, is any more difficult to answer than percent composition, frequency in use, how used, who uses, and other.
Am
I missing something?
No. It's just an example. I was just using an example of how we had been talking about weighting. WEIGHT.
Right.
A lot of those, perhaps frequency of use can be more anecdotally understood, and who uses it can. But percent composition is going to be a really – the reason percent composition is in there is it was offered up as a weighting factor in some of the comments that DTSC got as relevant. And so I'm just wondering if the panel has any thoughts about some of those, the difficulty, and should they be, in fact, or how could they be used if they should be. Kelly?
Yeah, I just want to say that I think it would be a big mistake to write total volume and production in as a criteria for prioritization, because it's the amount that of the chemical in the product that either there's an important exposure for humans or an important environmental exposure is what matters. And so I go back to the septic tank additive chemicals. That's exactly the kind of thing where it would rank way down on total volume and production, but there's an important environmental exposure and potential harm to human health associated with those. So that's what the department needs to be thinking about.
Okay, very, very helpful. Mike Kirshner, do you want to say something?
No.
You were just looking at your facial expression.
I was agreeing with Kelly that... we can't use total volume as a proxy for exposure. I mean, it's an interesting number, but it's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
And percent composition, too. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on that. Mike Wilson or Roger?
I agree with that. This is Mike. You know, I agree with that high volume is a poor proxy for sure. It's useful, however, and I think in Roger's delineation of the way he thinks through these five steps, it's one of them that's useful. And I guess the question, I have a question for Kelly. I keep hearing you come back to that DTSC needs to focus on known problems. And so you keep raising the issue of the septic tank chemicals and then brake liners and so forth. How do we avoid the problem of the just looking at the problems that we know exist that are under the lamppost and as a consequence then miss the entire universe that's surrounding the lamppost?
I agree that there's a need to do that, but I don't think we should be writing regulations to help the state figure out what other problems are here.
Okay, that's where I disagree.
It's really important, actually, if we write the regulations such that we do that, we close out the ability to tackle known problems.
Okay, that's a good question. I guess that was getting to my question to you earlier. Is it possible to have those two tracks actually take place?
And that's where I was suggesting that there's a difference between what the regulations do to set priorities and what the department and the state do to identify products that should be in the process. So the regulations need to establish a framework for dealing with them, but writing the regulations doesn't need to tell the department and the state how to do science.
Can I follow up, Debbie, with a question?
Yeah. And then I heard someone else wants to talk. Who's that other voice?
Yeah, this is Jay. Before we're moving out of percentage as well as volume.
Jay, can you hold on one sec? Mike wanted to ask, and then we'll come back to you.
Okay.
So hold that thought, please.
I'm just asking for Kelly to restate that I didn't quite understand the way you said that. The regulation was specifically about what the regulations should be, how they should be directing DTSC.
And I think the regulations should be directing the calendar, so basically the rulemaking or the regulatory action, this product chemical combination, that kind of thing. It should not be directing, here are all the other things that we want to think about that make things candidates for those regulations.
Kelly, I'm going to jump in right now, the SODEP.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll meet the statutory standard unless we specify the criteria that we will consider for identification and prioritization in the regulations.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
And
I think it's a question, Kelly, is how to – If that seems to be the spirit and the letter of AB 1879.
Exactly. And so that's why I've suggested this linkage to harm or potential for harm, the biggest sources, the costs, the alternatives. Those would be the criteria for establishing the priorities. So that is exactly what Odette was commenting on.
Okay.
But only for known problems.
Would be if there's no known harm or potential for harm, then I guess it's kind of hard. I mean, you could come up with the wording of that one is going to be hard. But if there's nothing that's going to be harmful about a chemical, then why would you be regulating it?
Kelly, this is Corey. We're still a little bit confused.
Yeah.
When you're talking about rulemaking, I think what I'm hearing is that you're talking about a generalized framework in the regulation, and then what you're calling rulemaking calendar is the plan on what chemicals we're going to work on. Is that how you're explaining it?
Yeah. The idea is that the product chemical combination, because we've discussed for a long time, is that there's this linkage between the chemical that's a pollution problem and the products that it's used in.
Okay, so are you talking about that's the plan you're talking about, that we would consider that and name those more specifically?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm using the wrong words, and I recognize that, and I really appreciate you. I'm trying to figure out what words to use, but what I would be envisioning is that the state would be making a list and say, here are the things that we want to tackle over the next few years, and taking public comment on it. And it would be soliciting, before the state makes that list, it would be soliciting input through petitions and consultations, as well as working with its own consultations with all the other agencies and working with its own scientists to come up with that initial list. It would take comment, and that list would look out several years, and then it would update that list every so often. But the way it makes the list, the actual factors would be those things that group that are something like what I listed.
I mean, isn't that what we're...
I think we might be on the same page,
yeah.
Maybe.
I think that last part you said would be our regulations and on hard and fast in the regs.
Right.
Yeah.
We talked about afterwards, it's kind of like implementing the regs and looking forward to what we're going to work on.
Exactly.
So can we go back a little bit and go over what you said would be the factors to develop the plan on what we're going to work on?
So what I was thinking was that the department doesn't have to go through the whole exercise of starting from scratch with every chemical and product in the universe and trying to set priorities on its own, and it doesn't have the resources to do that. So that's why I was thinking that the department would be soliciting input, and it would have a formal petition process so that anyone, any member of the public, including a business, a business industry association, environmental group, government organizations, would be able to put together information the department would need to make its decision and priorities. That the department would be consulting with other agencies, so the water boards, OEHA, Fish and Wildlife Service, Fish and Game, you know, other agencies that are out there. And then the department would also be asking, to the extent it had resources, a lot of the questions that we've been talking about. What are the things that we know, based on information available to us, are good candidates for regulation? And we've taught people, there's a lot of things that have been in conversation already. There's a huge array, and the department would probably need to go through its own internal process of picking some of these through some of the things, using some of the same kinds of approaches that we've talked about here, Roger's list, Mike's list, the stuff that's in the examples. And then it would put together a list of here's what we think we're going to tackle in the next few years and lay it all out. And then say, here are some categories where what we're going to tackle is information collection, and lay that all out, and ask for public comment on it.
Right. And then the criteria, I think, Kelly, you were mm-hmm. saying was level of harm, biggest exposure, sources of exposure, and cost to manage, and availability of alternatives.
Right.
So was that Corey who asked the question?
Yeah, I think I understand the gist of it.
Okay, great. So, Jay, you wanted to talk about a percent composition and such?
Yeah, a couple of comments. Number one, I think, what Roger said, to be what, the agenda exposure potentials, and I think the thought process is there by DTS staffing, right now to me. So, I don't see any big issues there, but I think you all made a good comments on that. Moving away from percent composition and the total volume of product, either in production or in use, I think is a mistake because, I'd like to understand, what is the root cause of controlling the chemicals is because the product contains that particular the chemicals either banned or in a high concern. So I think is a right approach for anyone to consider the percentage of chemicals in a product as well as the high volume products to sell or in production. So for example, printing wireboard, when we had only a small electronic age, 20 years ago, it was not much a problem of lead leaching out to the soil due to PWB, or for that matter, brominated materials, So in terms of really getting rid of the root cause of those chemicals in high concern and also, damage to human, is really how we can reduce or eliminate those chemicals from product in high use.
Yeah.
So I think you know, the way I think is really a root cause. Eliminate root cause, which easier as well as more business impact by concentrating high volume in terms of use, especially as well as in production. So that really also controlling the percentage of particular chemical compositions. So I think it's easier, more effective to attack the chemicals used in high volume.
Thank you, Jay. And I'm thinking when I look at Kelly's four criteria, her biggest sources of exposure really is sort of getting at your root cause idea as well. I think that's a really helpful way of framing it. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Mike. I guess I'm following up with Jay. If it sounds like what, Jay, that you're proposing that products be prioritized that have the highest concentrations of chemicals of concern and are sold in the highest volumes in the state. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. I think, you know, that makes sense. I think falls into, it's similar to what others are saying as Roger's priority setting and so forth.
Right, right, right. Also, cost-wise, it's much more effective to me, you know.
Jay, finish saying.
The effect of the cost of control that everybody worrying about or concerned, concerned about DTS has, you know, doesn't have enough resource and the capacity of attacking all that. So therefore, you know, by attacking the high concentration of chemicals, you know, concern, and as well as high volume, I think would be much more effective.
So I think there's a subtle difference here between biggest source of a problem and highest volume. I'm just thinking out loud, but Kelly wants to speak. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, let me give an example for that. Copper is a really important water pollution problem, and so I keep using this because it's a good example that I know a lot about. Most copper is used in wiring. A lot of copper is used in copper pipes and buildings. Neither of those are important water pollution sources. It's a little bit copper pipes, but not so much. A relatively small fraction of total copper use is in vehicle brake pads, and the water pollution from those brake pads starts being important at copper concentrations of, say, 1%. So that would totally fail the total volume thing. If you were looking at copper and then you were saying, oh, well, we'll look at the biggest volume uses, you would wind up prioritizing all the wrong stuff. And that's why it's the cross of where and how the product, you know, the concentration in the product and the volume of that chemical in commerce and the particular products that are the source of exposures. And I think what you're saying is right, but I think that it needs that exposure layer on top of it to be scientifically valuable for defining the program here.
Yeah, no, I agree in one sense, but here again, when you're talking about copper, look at the amount of copper contained in PWB also, because there are so much PWB used worldwide, and therefore what happened is how they dispose of it, and that really a big issue, you know. So I think we just have to plug any leakage from attacking the product that in high volumes, you know, PWB. Yes, I agree with you in terms of there is some niches of a product that really contain very toxic materials. I agree with that, you know. But
well, Jay, the printed wiring board is actually a great example. In terms of total volume of copper used, it's dinky compared to wiring and piping. And I'm not even sure how it compares to brake pads. They're in the same 5% of total copper use. So, and the concentration in a board of copper, Mike probably knows it here, but it's not that big. So you would actually, by writing a regulation that said that you had to do total volume in commerce and the percent concentration, you might prevent yourself from dealing with printed wiring boards and brake pads. Okay.
Maybe I could offer a suggestion on this.
Okay.
This is Mike. And that's that maybe we do need to distinguish between formulated products and articles, because it may be different with respect to this question of total volume sold and volume in the state. That it might make more sense on the formulated product side.
But you're talking formulate like a hairspray or...
Yeah, hairspray, solvents, brake cleaners, paints, thinners, adhesives, cleaning products.
Okay.
Yeah, and Kelly, I guess I would pose this question to you. If data on the volume of products sold in the state, formulated products, would be a useful metric, more so than in manufactured articles.
It's layered over with exposure, no? I mean, that it's, this is Debbie speaking, that it's also, you know, the high volume and that perhaps, and this is where we were getting in questions back to 2A, is how is it used and who uses it, right?
That's right, and I guess I'm asking that it might make sense for us in this discussion to focus on formulated products at this point.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, it may be, and I would say for this discussion, let's keep it open if we can, and to the two, because the legislation doesn't distinguish. So let's hold on to that, Mike, that distinction, and see if it's, maybe in the next call, if we can make it simplify things for us.
Uh-huh.
So what I'd like to do is I want to touch on this idea of cumulative adverse impacts, because this is something that comes up a lot, and maybe it's best handled in the chemicals piece, maybe not. I just wanted to get your sense of, should the prioritization evaluation be based on a product's individual threat of adverse impact or its contribution to cumulative adverse impacts? And if we are going to go into cumulative, how do we tackle that? So would anyone like to sort of talk about that specifically, cumulative impact? It's a tough one. And what would our recommendation be to DTSC on this? What would your recommendation be? Does anyone have a... Well, Kelly.
Yeah, I'll just say that I think that it's really important that the regulation be written such that where we're talking about the biggest exposure sources to human exposure, environmental exposure, that doesn't preclude regulation of a bunch of things that together cause a big exposure. So that always worries me, because sometimes where there's an exposure, it's coming from 10 different products, and together that matters, or the 10 different products contain ingredients that together create something that matters. So that does, I think, go to the biggest sources of exposure and how that's written.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments about cumulative impact? Is it an important concept to be in the reg?
Yeah, I mean, this is Mike. I think it's enormously important as an idea in human and environmental health. And I struggled with this in trying to think how would we actually implement this in language. And there may be a way to do it. I guess I got stuck more on that's sort of a second level, a layer of analysis, and we're still struggling with the first layer. But I guess I wouldn't want it to be lost. I think it's a really important concept, and maybe it's something we should take up at our second meeting.
Okay. So, and the thing we would take up at our second meeting is how.
That's right.
How do you deal with cumulative? Because that's what DTSC wants to. You know, they understand the concept. It's just how does one do it? Okay. So that's. Yeah, you're allowed to say you want some time to think about it.
That's kind of how I'm thinking. I guess my question is sort of going back to your 2B, the first paragraph, what exposure potential factors should be used? And I guess my question is to DTSC is if we are, to recommend any one of these particular you know, items that are in the parentheses there. That how do you imagine answering that question? Or how do you imagine responding to it? If we were to say percent composition or total volume or frequency, that where do you go with it?
Well, I think you all have talked about this somewhat, but if you're saying where do you go with it, I think you're then getting down into the next set of questions, which talks about, let's say we've established what our list of factors are. So then how do we apply those factors in terms of prioritizing the products as we move forward? And
right.
The next question, set of sub-questions gets into that. Specifically, should there be a threshold? So should we say that, you know, we're going to look at products that have above a certain percentage composition or above certain volume? That's an example of a threshold. Then if you look at 2C, this is another part of the same question where you could or could not combine this with thresholds, but should some sort of ranking formula be used? And as Debbie had mentioned earlier, there's some of these attachments, particularly 5 through 9, among there's some idea, there's some approaches that other people have used or suggested for ranking formulas. It's sort of a chart type of approach. And part of the question there is, if you are doing a ranking, should different factors be weighted? And I think you have talked about that a little bit in your discussion, but it might not be bad to have a further discussion. You know,
yeah.
Part
and
of what's underlying this is the department has received from a variety of sources the suggestion that in our prioritization process laid out in the regulations, it needs to be something very specific and predictable. So that's why we're asking these questions.
Thank you, Odette. So if everyone would just look at attachment 2.5 right now, attachment 2.5 is, and if you look at that, it's only 2 pages long. So just the first page, under example number 1, it has ranking formula for products. So this is an example of what somebody might suggest DTSC should do, that the product ranking score is, you know, you have a chemical ranking score times the percentage of the chemical in the product, potential for exposure, likelihood for exposure to sensitive subpopulations or environmental receptors. So you have some formula with a weighting, and then they've actually defined what each of those are, although they are somewhat hard to determine, I would suggest. And the idea is being you could have high, medium, and low. So is that kind of a system something that should be in the regulations as a useful tool for setting priorities, moving and explaining the priorities that are in there and then moving forward? Does anybody want to comment on that? So now we're really talking about A and C in item 2 in question 2B.
I jump in here. I think it's a, I was able to look at these in some detail, and I think the direction is good here. I think we do need to come up with a means of ranking, and some of these, are useful approaches. And of course, they also, they get into very quickly into some complicated questions about how do we rank toxicity, how do we deal with the data gap problem and so forth. But I guess I would say just that in general, I think this is a useful exercise. And it will also help us identify where the largest data gaps are.
Kelly? Yeah, I think that while these are useful exercises, this is exactly the kind of thing that should not be in regulation, because it ties the department's hands and creates an arbitrary and not really very helpful system towards identifying what the priorities are. So those kinds of things might be things the department would use to be coming up with its own suggestions that it did not receive through consultation or petitions. But I really think it would be totally counterproductive to put this in there. And instead, predictability should be provided through the listing of here's what we're going to tackle over the next several years and offering that for public comment.
But Kelly, again, I have to ask you though about this. It sounds like there's two tracks that you're proposing here.
Mm-hmm.
One is tackling the known problems that are high priority that DTSC should have the ability to tackle right now. And the other is responding to the problems that we actually don't know are a problem yet. And that's, I think, what this ranking is trying to get at, giving DTSC a lens to deal with those, that bigger universe. Am I confused about that?
No, I think you've got it right. I don't think that the ranking needs to be in regulations. I think that the law and all the stuff we're talking about here is that there's a scientific need for a real look at stuff that we don't necessarily have the information on. But I don't think that writing a regulation to establish priorities for products and chemicals for regulation today is the place where we set in place how that scientific evaluation is done. And
if
that's...
I want to say something, then I need to say something.
Okay.
Yeah. I
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Odette wanted to speak. Who else wanted to speak?
Jeff.
Jeff.
Jeff go first, and then I need to weigh in here.
Jeff and then Odette.
Yeah, my comment is, this is Jeff. I'd be very cautious about a strict ranking system in terms of the very issues that Mike and others have talked about, in that there is an imperfect set of information out there. And so when you have a rigorous ranking system, that imperfections in information are probably going to make life quite difficult, and if not impossible. I've been involved in a series of committees looking at ranking systems for other issues, and it is very hard to do, obviously, when you have imperfect information.
Right.
Now, setting priorities, I think you're trying to use ranking as a surrogate for setting priorities, and I think that Kelly's comments may offer some practical methodology to set priorities, which is not necessarily needing a strict ranking system. And I think you do need to have a system to inform your priorities, and their priorities can be then justified based upon public comment.
So, Dan, I'm probably going to disagree just a little bit with Jeff. I agree.
Not
with
unusual.
It. No, I agree with what he's saying, but I want to leave the door open for the fact that the department might entertain using a ranking approach, which a number of other people, a number of other states and entities have used, if you look at the examples in the attachment. So I want to leave the door open for that. But the comment I wanted to make was that if we were to use any kind of a ranking approach, it would have to be spelled out in the regulations. If it was not spelled out in the regulations and then we use that to establish lists, in California there's something called an underground regulation law prohibition that we would run up against. So just so you know that. And Jeff,
so that's,
more
so that's
yeah.
very important then to, in
right.
terms of the determination of whether or not we want to use rankings and formulaic rankings at all, because to your point, Odette, is if we decide to do that, it has to be in regulation. So what are the consequences of that? And we can, I think that would be a good thing for us to think about in the next call. Is
well,
Owen, I'm sorry, now there's a couple of voices. Who would like
sorry.
To speak?
This is Jeff again.
Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, so just to not to disagree with Odette, because I agree with Odette, but the issue of ranking comes about, the difficulty that I'm trying to address is can be solved by defining the boundary condition. So if you're going to rank all shampoos, that's more possible than trying to rank shampoos, cars, battleships, and airplanes. So again, the difficulty is where arises when you have a very wide boundary condition.
Interesting.
And I think that was a point I was going to make. And I think if I understand Jeff, your point about the sort of hazards of strict ranking systems is if they require information that you don't have access to, it sets you up into a logical paralysis, essentially. It makes it really impossible almost to implement the regulation. Is that what you're suggesting?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Debbie, this is Roger.
Roger, go ahead.
Yeah. I think that ranking of some sort is a very valid process that we use often to make decisions with. And so I think two words need to be added here. One would be relative ranking. That would be the first word, to make sure the rankings are relative to in some manner. And secondly, to categories, because to Jeff's point, it is you can't compare a shampoo to a battleship. But you can compare shampoos to shampoos, and I think so if ranking were something that the agency decided that it would like to pursue as a way of creating some priority, way of creating priority, then maybe defining the criteria upon which that relative ranking will be based is going to be extremely important, and then keeping it into categories.
And I'm thinking, I mean, the use of ranking here, my understanding, is to compare shampoos to battleships. I mean, it is to determine which product categories would and are going to be addressed and in what order. And I do think it's an interesting juxtaposition, I don't know, comparison of terms to think of prioritization versus ranking, that those are two different processes. And I appreciate that, Jeff. That's interesting. I see Mike Kirshner would like to say something.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, the other issue here, 2B, the cumulative impact brings you to that anyway, because if both shampoos and battleships are major sources of exposure for a chemical of concern, you have to deal with both of them. There are sophisticated ranking, prioritizing techniques, not the simplistic things that are listed here as simple, you know, A times B times C,
right,
that may be more appropriate. So I don't think that you, if you can at all, avoid specifying the process by which you prioritize and simply say that you you will, under these circumstances, prioritize if you even have to, that you leave the methodology out instead of having a simple or locking yourself into a simple mechanism for prioritization.
So that actually, I'm just looking at the time, and that actually leads us really nicely, Michael, thank you, into question 2C. And so question 2C really gets at, do we set in the regulations some product categories and then a process, or do we just set up a process? So that's really, I want to get people's opinions for that. And there's pluses and minuses for both. And so let's see. And I know I have my opinion, but who would like to talk about this question of the list, of just thinking about the regs? Now, remember that last version of the regs called out three product categories and said, we're going to address these first and then we're going to add to there. So that was sort of the strategy they did. It doesn't matter, we can disagree or agree with those product categories, but that was the strategy that was taken. And it was a way of sending a signal, perhaps, and it was a way of talking about what was being done. So that's one strategy. The other strategy is to simply put the process in, and then in a way it's sort of Kelly's model of, and then those categories of product chemical things get added over time. So let's just, I want to spend 10 minutes talking about this, and then I'm going to cut it off, and we will end on time. So who would like to weigh in on question 2C?
I guess I could weigh in.
Thanks, Mike.
Sure, and I think maybe what's coming to mind here for me is sort of along the lines of what I heard Kelly suggesting, which was a two-part or a two-track process. One that deals with you know, products that we know are a problem today, and there are safe alternatives readily available, and that DTSC should have, you know, be able to move quickly and efficiently on those. That would be sort of track one. And the second track, I would recommend that we set up a process that then allows us to identify and prioritize the broader universe of products, and that it would be premature to stipulate which ones of those are of highest concern in the regulation.
So, Mike, are you saying in the regulations, the one we would list some products and then have a process as well? Did I understand that?
That's right.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And other people want to weigh in. Roger, Jay, do you have an opinion on this?
I agree with Mike. I think the way I like to see, number one, as Kelly said, in terms of some kind of prioritizations, and then attack that way. That way, I think it's showing or demonstrate, you know, DTSC is really have a impact. And number two, what Mike said in terms of, okay, still we need, you know, to set up the process so that, you know, the DTSC prepare for the future additions, for example. So
Jay, you're saying also you think that starting out the regs with some predetermined product categories, are you saying that?
Yes.
Well, that's what I heard close
to. And he's also saying to follow, include a process as well.
Correct.
Right.
So Kelly has got a puzzled look on her face.
Yeah, because if you guys are agreeing with what I was saying, I was distinctly saying not to list product categories, because that exactly ties the department's hands and is exactly the opposite of what I was saying.
Oh.
What I was saying was establish the criteria, allow the department to create those lists of product chemical combinations that it'd be working on.
But, well, Kelly, why wouldn't you start off with some product categories? What's the danger? Doesn't stop there. It's just as if that's ground one, you know.
Because I think that you could really misdirect your resources. The department doesn't know. It hasn't solicited comments on what are all the things in the universe that are problems that are in products that could be tackled right now. We haven't gone through that exercise, and we don't want to hold up writing the regulations to do that. We want to set in place a process that uses all that external expertise to get that together, have the department put that out for public comments so that it gets input on that. But the decision-making criteria are partly scientific and partly policy issues like cost, good alternatives. I mean, there's these other factors that weigh into the decision-making. And that's why I think it's not wise. In fact, I think it would be very unwise to set some product categories in stone in the regulation, because it would actually probably keep us from solving those problems.
Okay. Kelly, this is Odette. I want to express some concerns I'm having about your suggested approach, if I understand it correctly, to list in the regulations, after getting public comment, specific individual products.
No, I'm not suggesting that.
That's the opposite of what you were saying, but...
You are saying put the chemicals for public comment?
No,
instead of product?
So what I'm suggesting is that we'd set these criteria for prioritization into the statute, but that into the regulation, but the regulation would not list the specific product chemical combinations. That the department would then follow through a process, which it would be the consultation and whatever scientific work it brought to the table, and it would come up with a list of things for the next several years, thereby providing predictability and so forth. But the regulation would list the prioritization factors without listing the product chemical. Okay.
I mean, that, I would be in favor of that. I thought you were making a very explicit point that we needed to deal with things like the septic cleaner, you know, septic problem, chemicals in septic tanks, and these things that DTSC is well aware of. But maybe there are other vehicles that DTSC takes action on those, and that this regulation would be primarily focused on how and the, you know, how we're setting up the process for identifying, prioritizing.
So there isn't another vehicle for dealing with the septic K chemicals, the PAHs and pavement seal coats, brake pads. Well, now there's for brake pads, but those kinds of things, there's not another vehicle, and that's exactly why there should be prioritization here, because the department didn't know about all those other things.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Roger, Michael Kirshner, you have comments on this?
Yeah, I do. I'm concerned that we have a situation where you have both chemicals and products, and they're deeply intertwined. This is not, you can't isolate the products from the chemicals and say we're going to go after this set of products. Because it may not be the right chemicals, or it may not be the source of the chemical problem. You have to look at this holistically. And that's the challenge I see with specifying them. Now, on the other hand, I would prefer that I did like the idea in the more recent versions of the draft that narrowed that universe and started along a path towards more formulated products, although they put children's products in there as well, because I thought those might be a little easier to deal with since the chemicals are known and their locations are known and their uses are generally known as well. But after today's meeting, I'm not quite so sure that even that's a good idea. I think that the regulation really needs to determine how to address the most serious problems or chemical problems in the most likely sources of those chemical of those chemicals, and that intersection is where we work. We work on this, or where the department, you know, addresses first. So you will also, of course, run into 2B's 2B, the cumulative issue as well. You will get more products for a specific chemical, perhaps like bisphenol A, right? There's many sources for that. For all the phthalates, there's many sources. But to specify a product, if I specify a specific product, I risk potentially excluding all the other sources and perhaps we'll miss an important one. So I'm very nervous about including any specific definition of product. I think we really need to, as Kelly says, put the process in the regulation, not the specifics.
Okay. Jay, do you have a sense on that? Or Roger, I don't remember who hasn't spoken. No?
No, I guess I spoke, you know, so.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm as a now member of this panel, I would say that I am inclined to try and put some product categories in there to begin with a robust process. I would like DTSC to get started. I would like to use those as pilots, if you will, so that we learn from them. I would like them to be chosen carefully so that they're not, you know, so that they actually are biggest uses and biggest sources for chemicals of concern. So, I mean, to Kelly's point of we don't want that determination to hold up the regulations, I'm just wondering if there aren't some things that rise to the top now that we can use as our sort of first take. I don't want to use the word poster children for them, but, you know, as the first crack at doing this and implementing the regulations and moving us forward, I would like to think that there are some product categories that we can think of. So any final less than 1 minute comment that anyone would like to say before I close this out?
Debbie, this is Roger.
Okay.
The only thing I would say is that the state of California has some precedent for establishing products in some of its other regulations, such as its CARB regulations, where it has specifically identified product categories. So I can't align the two. I can't suggest that the two be that those lists, those product category lists be used. I'm just saying that there is some precedence where the state has in the past been able to identify and effectively use product categories to move forward. And it doesn't mean you have to do them all at once. As I recall, the CARB regulations were set up on timelines, allowing companies to have reasonable amount of time to adjust its formulations over time if necessary. So it might be that product categories are difficult and pose challenges, but it's not out of the question that they can be effective.
Right. Thank you. And I think that really gets to the question 2C with that, the second one on that list. You know, do we want to sort of use that sort of timeline approach? Okay, so we have 2 minutes for me to wind this up. And first of all, I just want to thank everybody who is on this call and is working really hard intellectually to try and think about the questions and answer them. It's hard to do on the phone. It's hard to do when you've got a complex issue. So I appreciate everyone's really good energy on that. And thank you, DTSC staff, for following along and asking probing questions when you needed clarification. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to ask you to take a look at some of these attachments. I'm going to ask if perhaps between now and then Odette can get some clarification on CARB's selection of product categories, if that's helpful or not. And then I'm going to ask each of us to think about what we want to, in our next call, that's our last time to go deep as a small group, where we are going to try and actually say not what the problems are, but what the solutions are. What do we propose that DTSC do? And I really want to thank those of you on this call who were working on that. This, I really felt that there was an attempt to do that. And I want us to go even further to think about the distinction between prioritization and ranking, and to think about this idea of, do we want to have a regulatory process that's ongoing, where we have to go through a public process every time we add categories of products, or do we want to try and get these regs with enough specificity in them so that that doesn't have to happen? And perhaps DTSC can come back to us with what some of the consequences are for those two very different approaches in terms of time and in terms of legal ramifications. That would be helpful. Is that possible, Odette and Corey and Colleen?
Okay. I think I'm pretty much hearing everybody say that when we make changes to the list, we want an opportunity for public comment participation. And that can be built in, but it will take time, but that is a much shorter process and much less work intensive than doing a formal rulemaking process, which has a whole bunch of other bells and whistles that are built into it and would probably, I'm just throwing this off the top of my head, but would probably make the process two or three times as long as it would be if we don't have to go through the formal rulemaking process.
Okay, so given that, then what we're going to be thinking about for the next call, and I'm just trying to wrap this up, is that tension and that interplay between detail in the regs and flexibility, because that's really what this boils down to. And it's a tough line that DTSC has to follow. So it's 1 minute after noon. I want to thank everyone so much for this call and say goodbye.
All right. Thank you, Debbie.
We'll talk to you on the 19th.
All righty.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you so much.